From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West.
I'm Doug Fabrizio. If you get a chance to see the documentary film Dina, which caused a sensation at Sundance last year, you're going to wonder if it's real. Because the characters, the story, even the dialogue, it all seems too perfect. It's about Dina Buono, this outspoken woman on the autism spectrum. It's her life and her relationships. The filmmaker Antonio Santini says they didn't want to make a documentary full of talking heads. So they just filmed Dina as she tried to heal from a traumatic past and made preparations to get married. Santini says if you have the patience to observe reality, it's going to be way more surreal and way more interesting than fiction. You just have to let it unfold. Dina is being screened in Salt Lake City tomorrow. We're talking about the film after the news. It's Doug Fabrizio, and our latest short film is about Vicky Chavez, who was facing deportation several weeks ago when she asked the Unitarian Church in Salt Lake City if they would take her in. They did, and the film is about how Vicky and her children now find themselves as part of this ancient concept of sanctuary. Go see it at radiowest.org. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The film Dina won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance last year. Audiences were taken by the story of Dina Buono, a woman with mental disabilities, anxiety, OCD, autism. And in the film, she's trying to heal herself. She's fallen in love. The film was popular because it's lovely and touching, but laugh out loud funny, too. The directors have called it a romantic comedy, even though technically, it's a documentary. Dina is very real. Antonio Santini, who co-directed the film, has said a lot of documentaries about people with disabilities just use them as B-roll, you know, filler and background shots, and let other people talk about them and their struggles. But Dina is up front, the main character. She speaks for herself. The Utah Film Center is screening the film tomorrow night. Those who get to go will get a chance to meet Dina. We'll give you the details about that a little bit later on the program. Dina will also be joining us in a moment as we talk about the film today. But we're going to begin with Antonio Santini, who co-directed the film along with his creative partner Dan Sickles. Antonio joined us from a studio in New York City. I guess let's start with, for those who don't know the story, how The way we all came to know Dina was because Dan, your co-director, knew her. Mm-hmm. Dan grew up with her. His father taught her in high school. He was kind of a father figure. Is that how he came to know her?
Yeah. Dan's father started a chapter for a network. It's part of a network of clubs called the Kiwanis Action Club, and he started his own chapter in the basement of a public library in Philly. And Dina was one of the members there. And Dan had known her his whole life, along with other members of the club. And Dan's father passed away when we were editing our first feature, Mala Mala, and we all went to the funeral, and Dina was there. So it was just a coincidence, I guess, that Sophia, our editor, Adam, our cinematographer, and I were all there. And Dina was she was the only person who was talking at the funeral and kind of introducing herself and making conversation, something that people don't usually do. So she definitely stayed in our heads, but we definitely didn't think that she would end up being the protagonist of our movie.
But at what point did that happen where somebody said to someone else, hey, maybe there's a film about Dina?
Well, we were editing Mala Mala. Mala Mala is about 9 trans-identifying people in Puerto Rico.
Yeah.
And so it's like an ensemble movie. And when we went to the club Dan wanted to connect with the members of the club. They both wanted to grieve over this loss. We, outside of the club, I remember in the car, we were like, wow, we had all these questions, basically. And that's usually how it starts, with a bunch of questions and things that we don't understand. And that we want to understand, and things that also just fascinate us. So we had that moment happen there, but it was definitely too soon, and, you know, it was just kind of like a thing that we both were curious about. And then Dan found out that Dina was getting engaged to Scott.
Yeah.
And then that's when Dan and me were like, okay.
Maybe there's a story here.
Yeah, I mean, Dina, you know, when we filmed, so we went to the club and we started filming. At first we thought the movie was going to be about the club.
Yeah.
And we started filming intros with each member. And really, Dina was, she had a quality that the other people didn't possess. And it was that she wanted, it's not that she was just answering the questions, but she was collaborating. And she was, she had that, I guess that screen quality where you want to be filmed and you have things to say as opposed to just kind of answering whatever's being thrown at you. And, you know, we slowly realized, and I still realize even more now, like she, in a way, Dina was waiting for us the same way that we were looking for her.
Right.
She had all these things that she wanted to say, and she really understood, you know, not just the value of her experience, but also she understood what it represented to other people. So it didn't really take a lot of explaining. She's read so many books about authors that have been diagnosed with autism or are neurodiverse. So she's always understood how those stories are important for other people. They help people feel less lonely. They help parents raise their kids. And she's always thought that she, you know, she could be one of those stories.
Hmm. Dina's in this interesting spot. And I mean, she's on the spectrum, of course. She struggles with certain mental illnesses. Her mother describes them as this kind of smorgasbord. She's got trauma in her life. But then she has this openness and this deep sense of self-awareness that is really, I mean, that's the most amazing thing in the film, I have to say, in some ways, is just her sense of awareness about herself. Her sense that she realizes how odd this situation may be or how funny she can be. It seems like she's in on it. That's what's so great about it.
Yeah, I think, you know, throughout her life, the whole thing about her not being able to censor herself, you know, has really, I think, made her life difficult for her. You know, she's been unable to really, I don't know how to say, lie as maybe other people have been able to. And she's hasn't been good at pretending. She hasn't been good at playing a role, really. You know, Dina's always, the real Dina's always, you know, seeping through the seams. And so that really works really well in a film because the character's always there, right? And and it's never hiding. And yeah, I mean, for us, filming versus watching the footage was a different experience. I think filming was always very intense because there were lots of things happening. You know, Dan and her were grieving over his father.
Yeah.
And if you extend a lot of the clips where we cut, sometimes the conversation becomes about Ed, Dan's father. And, you know, and that really is the glue at the beginning of the film. Then little by little, you're having these relationships develop outside of the scene. You know, Dan and Dina get into a new place, me and her developing a new relationship, her and Adam, who's our DP. And, you know, her life is happening. So we're also her friend, and we're getting to know her mom. We start to become part of their family. Mm-hmm. At the same time, we're keeping distance because, yeah, she is the protagonist of the film and we're making this film. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff happening, and it's just really, we moved to Philly to shoot the film. And, you know, in my memory, we did it in trips, you know, and then when we drive back to New York from Philly, that trip is always like a decompression trip. It's always like, you know, and we just start, basically we're like, wow. We always go like that because always something new has happened that has just, you know, we're like, oh, we gotta come back and explore that.
Yeah. Well, one of the things you've said is that the film in some way is, it's kind of what you were getting at, I guess, shaped through the feelings that you all have and the relationship that you all have with Dina and with Scott and the family. And I have to say, I think it's good to know that because I think people who don't know the backstory, don't know your relationship with the characters, are going to be at least initially protective of Dina and Scott, you know, like wondering, wait a minute, should I be seeing this? Some of this is really intimate, and are they going to exploit these guys? And who are these people filming this? And should I trust them? Because it's so intimate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, so let me think. Probably the the moment in filming that really points to that is the intimacy scenes. You know, the yeah. part where she's in the bathroom getting cute for Scott, and mm-hmm. she's about to take off her robe, and you know, in that moment, you know, it's her bedroom and it's two cameras and it's us three, and yeah, those questions come up in her head. You know, Dina, the whole intimacy thing even entered the film because it was a thing that Dina would talk to us a lot, you know, at yeah. lunch, at dinner, or in between takes, or in between filming. And it was just a thing that there's the movie that you're filming, and then there's the conversation that's happening outside of the filming.
Right.
And then little by little, you start to go, wait, you start to literally move the camera towards that conversation that you're having. You're like, wait, this is actually the movie. You know, you're basically constantly constructing this movie in your head. It's like a sculpture, and you're constantly trying to break it down to then keep getting closer and closer to what it can be. You constantly realize that you're blocking what the movie can be because you're so obsessed with, like, this idea that you already all agreed on what the movie would be. So on the side, you have Dina there talking, being like, this is really hard. You know, like, these are the things that I'm dealing with. And, like, she's like, she's saying, I don't know, like, she's asking us, is it okay that I have these desires? Is it okay that I'm angry with Scott?
Yeah.
And we're going, oh, my God, like, this is not, we didn't realize we would be dealing with these questions, you know, and we wouldn't realize that we would be taking this role in her life on a personal level. So, you know, then the conversation becomes about the film, and this is the part that Dina wants in the film and a part that she thinks it's important. You know, everything's based on collaboration. But for us, it was hard. I remember Adam at one point being like, oh, like, should we turn off the camera in that bedroom scene?
Yeah.
And we were like, well, that's complicated. That's a loaded thing, because if you turn off the camera because it makes you uncomfortable, then you're censoring her, you know, and you're saying, you know, I don't feel comfortable with Dina having desires. You know, but you're also saying, I want to protect her. But you have to ask yourself, what are you protecting her from? So what we decided is, you know, we'll film. And then in the editing room with Sophia, our editor, you know, we'll talk about all these things. And of course, no film is going to come out of that room until it's been vetoed and, you know, and filtered many times.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's the process. But yeah, that's, you know, that's the goal of the movie. You know, exploitation is the question of the film.
Right.
You know, it's saying, why is that question coming up? How are we seeing Dina in relation to us? Or how is one person seeing in relation to them? Because I don't actually even think about it as us anymore. Throughout process, I started siding more on Dina's side, you know, and feeling more part of her world and less of this kind of world that I thought I was a part of, you know. The neurodiversity, you know, how all these people in her club, the Action Club, are all so different from each other. Everyone comes at it from a different angle, yet everyone's bonded by their differences.
Yeah.
You know, we really identified with that, and it really, it was healing in a way. It really let us give Dina space without thinking that we had some sort of power over her space or over her voice. You know, that kind of idea that you come in and say, oh, here's someone who's been diagnosed with autism. It's my job to protect them. That's complicated, you know, that. But you can say, I'm here to collaborate with that person, you know, and then you take the power dynamic away, you know.
Yeah.
And then you see that you're both coming at it. You're both offering something. It's not just, it's the idea that Dina and everyone in the film is a protagonist of the film. They're not a subject of the film. You know, we're not making them do things. They're aware of what they're doing. You know, it's about treating them with respect, the same way that you would treat an actress. Which is what made it really fitting and what made us move closer and closer to the idea of making it a rom-com. You know, of saying, this isn't actually a movie about your diagnosis. This is a movie that you star in, and it's your life.
Rom-com, that's interesting, because I have to say, the film at times is hysterical. And there were times when I wondered, that's just straight out funny, but not funny because the protagonists, as you put it on the film, are not neurotypical. They're just funny and aware enough to be funny and trying to be funny. And I didn't feel like I was making fun of them by laughing. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, because, you know, Dina's laughing, I'm laughing, and if Dina's not laughing there, then she's laughing after when she's watching it. You know, for us, it's hard because once you become so intimate with someone, then when you premiere a film or you're standing on a stage and you're talking about the film and there's so much distance, right, where the audience is approaching it from, these are delicate questions where you go, what I love to do is that when Dina can be there with us, you know, I like people to direct the questions at her, you know, and let her speak about her experience instead of asking me to talk about her role in the film. You know, lets her talk to, and that's the thing that, you know, that's kind of our whole thing, right? Like that's, you know, Dina's really only our second feature. And, you know, I'm really interested in working with reality. You know, I think that there's so much that can be done with it. And I feel like we kind of use old language to talk about how documentaries operate or what a documentary can be and what the rules are. And there's all these ethics. And then, you know, you enter the narrative space and then it's all the different rules, right? It's like, what are the rules for the narrative space? Nothing. The whole point of narrative is to break the rules.
Yeah.
So for us, we're operating like that, but in the documentary space, you know, and we're trying to get people to engage with their surroundings, with their reality in a new way. And, you know, and we were lucky enough to have Dina to work with to do that, you know, because beyond a movie about neurodiversity, I think it's really a movie about the possibilities of, you know, of how we relate to the everyday, to the reality.
I wonder at what point... the film is called Dina, of course, but it becomes Dina and Scott as it. And I wonder, did you anticipate that? Did you expect that it would really be about both of them in some ways?
Well, at the end of the movie, yeah, the title comes up again and then it handwritten Scott's name comes up. And that's literally how it happened. The movie was really about Dina. And then, you know, Scott moved in and he was in the background. We would be filming Dina and then Scott would walk in and put on the TV or... Suddenly we realized someone was crunching cereal in the corner and we were like, And we were like, hey, Scott, you know you're in the frame. And he's like, oh, okay, sorry. And then he would try to get up and leave. And then, you know, eventually we're like, you know, Scott, you know, there's a value to, obviously, to your role in this. Are you interested? And he was basically, well, if my dear Dina wants me to, I'll do it.
Yeah.
So for him, it was very much for him, he really did it to support Dina. But obviously for us, we thought it was, you know, here's a completely different experience that we can, that'll help, you know, contrast Dina's experience and it'll play a role. But he really saw it as a way of supporting her. He knew, you know, when he met Dina, that this is part of who Dina is, you know, her looking for platforms.
Yeah.
You know, before we started filming, she was already speaking at autism conventions. You know, by the time that we met her, she had already written 80 pages of a memoir that she's been working on called I Was Born on the Wrong Planet. So this is all part of her narrative already, you know? So I think for Scott, camera showing up at home, you know, maybe it hadn't happened before, but I think it almost made sense.
Let me play a moment from the film. This is early on, and it gets kind of the core story playing out between Scott and Dina in that they are getting ready to get married, and they're moving in together. But then what about the question of sex? What about the question of intimacy? But here's just this moment early on when Scott has arrived to unpack his things. He's going to live in the same apartment with Dina. Let me play this moment to give people a sort of a sense of it all. Here's a moment from Dina.
I'm excited to have you.
I'm excited to be here. It's going to be a new experience for me. I haven't lived on my own since ever.
Well, I, lived on my own for 20-something years, and I never thought I was going to share an apartment with somebody again.
Uh-huh.
I was happy that I lived by myself, but it's even more exciting to have somebody here.
Thank you, dear. I appreciate that.
Scott is eager and... Dina is eager, and there's a kind of her sexuality is such a part of this film. She has this healthy sense of it, and there's a candor to her, an honesty, and an openness, and this kind of longing. And I wanted you to say something about that. We'll talk about this with Dina here in a moment, but this, I guess, this kind of tension between Scott's reluctance, lack of experience, even maybe where he is on the spectrum, that doesn't allow him to be as physical, as intimate Would you talk about this? Because this is an important tension in the narrative.
Yeah, I love how Dan talks about Scott's sexuality when it comes up. You know, he talks about it as a kind of queerness. Hmm. You know, sometimes we have these ideas of what an ideal human sexual health situation is, right? Like how a man, you know, how the optimal male behaves sexually, how the optimal female behaves sexually. And, you know, I think what Scott brings up is the conversation that sex isn't always penetration.
Yep.
And that, you know, what is sex and what are the ways that we relate intimately to other people? And also just, you know, what experiences and experimentation bring to the table. You know, Dina is just someone that just has more experience than Scott in the terms of she's just done more stuff. And she's had more people in her life that have introduced her to different things. Before Scott was living at Dina's, he was living in the basement of his parents' house. And he hadn't had a girlfriend before. Mm-hmm. And when we asked him about kissing other people, he said he had only kissed another person by mistake once. So, you know, he's just coming at it a different angle. And in many ways, it's almost like, you know, yeah, I guess typically a boy when he's 17, he's kind of in that, you know, his hormones are making him experiment and all that stuff. But it's like if you take that and then you push that all the way to in your 40s, then, you know, maybe it's just become kind of overwhelming, you know. Yeah. And we tend to focus a lot on the pressures that women have because of magazines and representation in media. But, you know, men have a lot of pressure too. And, you know, not every man feels, you know, virile. Not every man feels hyper-confident in their sexuality and in their role. Some men, you know, don't identify like that. And I think Scott's someone who's always found all that kind of roughness and all that dominance. He's never really identified with it.
Yeah.
And I think he's always, it's kind of always scared him away from the kind of intimacy that he would be interested in. You know, and something that I would tell Dina as a friend, I'd say, hey, you know, when it comes to getting to know your partner, just don't bring up your ex. That's just a universal rule.
Yeah.
That's just not going to put anyone in the mood.
Yep.
So, you know, and I think that was it. We would observe and say, yeah, that's just a lot of pressure.
Yeah.
Because, the other guy was experienced.
Yeah. There is a moment, it's such an amazing moment, where Dina and Scott go to Atlantic City to look at the beach, and she has this present for him that she's wrapped up. And it's The Joy of Sex, the book, you know, that everyone knows, that 22 million people have read or whatever. And so I want to play this moment where she gives it to him, and then there's this conversation, you know, and basically it's Dina, like, she's telling him, I want to be desired, and he wants to offer her something, but he's unsure just how or what. Again, that kind of experience thing. But it's such a great moment in the film. Here it is from Dina.
You know, uh-huh. I've been around. I hate to say.
Uh-huh.
You know, I'm 48 years old, and I think I'm more interested in this than you, right?
I could learn.
I wouldn't like certain things. Like, some people like rough sex.
Uh-huh.
And blindfold and chains and harnesses.
No, that sounds like a dominatrix. I'm not like that.
Well, the psycho liked rough sex, but he would do it. But I know somebody that wanted to... be chained up in handcuffs. And I thought that would be kind of neat, but then I would feel rough.
Because
somebody abused me like that.
Mm-hmm.
Chained me up and then smacked my butt and smacked me.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, I had the experience of lovemaking.
Mm-hmm.
Such a great moment. It's so great. And I have to say, Scott becomes such an important character. I've heard your co-director, Dan Sickles, describe Scott as a Shakespearean character.
Yeah, he does. Yeah, Dan always loved the way that, you know, Scott just... It's almost like he was raised on a different era of television. And the ways that he expresses things are almost things you would have heard on old TV shows.
Yeah, totally. Absolutely. And the other thing that I think is important to say about Scott is how important music is to him.
Well, sorry to interrupt you, but yeah, that's the thing with them. It's like they're constantly surprising us. They're constantly throughout the film, what the ways that they express each other always surprises. I think because, I think most of us are short on language of how to express our desires. You know, that's something that I think a lot of us struggle through without our lives. But also because we're coming with these expectations of how Dean and Scott should or would express themselves. And throughout the film, I think by the end, you're like, wow, you know, at least they're really good at communicating as a couple.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me play another moment. This is with a scene with Dina and Scott. And it's a moment when, as you'll hear, when she's upset. I mean, she's trying to express this need for intimacy. Scott's trying to be patient and be understanding, and he's trying his best, and she feels guilty about bringing it up. And then there's this moment when he takes out his phone and does this, I think, really lovely thing. Here's another moment from the film.
I don't know why I'm being such a baby about it.
It's all right, sweetheart. Don't think about it.
I shouldn't be. I shouldn't be. And I'm sorry because you don't need this, because it's like I'm a selfish person.
You're not selfish, sweetheart. It's okay.
I just, sometimes I get frustrated because I know you try really hard, but sometimes I just get frustrated.
This should help. Listen. Just listen.
That's that song that
that's
I like.
It. That's it.
I'll be right here waiting for you.
Right.
Day after day,
and I slowly go insane. I hear your voice all alive.
Antonio, when that moment happened, and there were so many, I guess there were so many moments like that that just seemed perfect. Did you guys look at each other and say, That's amazing. I mean, were you aware when these moments, the extraordinary moments were happening, or did you find them later?
Yeah, that's always what we're searching for.
Yeah.
We're always, that's the patience. You know, you set up the camera, you don't move the camera, and you just wait, you know, because you just know at one point that if you have enough patience, something amazing will happen between two humans. It's just a matter of time between, you know, for that to happen. And sometimes you're just really tired and you're ready to go home. But it's our job, you know, it's either Dan's job to push me or it's my job to push him and to say, no, like, let's stick it out. And we know that the alchemy of this situation should bring up something. But yeah, that was definitely a moment where we're always behind the camera. And yeah, we're always reacting as quietly as we can.
Yeah.
Telling each other, you know, oh, this would be good for this. Or now that we have this, we've got to make sure that we get this. And you know, I have to say, I haven't seen the movie in a while, and it's crazy. It is crazy because the whole setup that we did was we tried to approach it as simply as we could. We tried to not overcomplicate the process and let Dina and Scott, you know, come in the forefront and us as directors stay back. But yeah, that's just magic, right? That's just literally what happened. So I'm almost making mental notes going, okay, don't forget that for your next movie. Don't forget that. You know, that if you find a subject, a protagonist that's a subject that can be a protagonist, then they can lead the movie themselves.
That's Antonio Santini. He's with us. He, along with Dan Sickles, directed the documentary film Dina. Tomorrow night, the Utah Film Center is screening the film for free at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. Antonio Santini, Dan Sickles, and Dina Buono herself, they're going to be there for a Q&A after the screening. You can get details about it on our website, radiowest.org. We'll take a break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're talking about the documentary film Dina, which the Utah Film Center is going to be screening. We'll give you details about that a little bit later on the program. We've been talking with Antonio Santini, who co-directed the film alongside Dan Sickles. Joining us now on the program is Dina Buono from her home outside of Philadelphia. And Dina, welcome to you. Thanks very much for doing this.
Thank you very much. It's been quite the pleasure.
So I wanted to begin by asking you, why did you decide to reveal some of the most intimate parts of your life to filmmakers?
Oh my gosh, for so many reasons. The first reason is when Dan and Antonio came to me and said, let's make a film, I felt at first, oh wow, cameras, acting.
Yeah.
All my dreams were coming true. And plus, I love Dan very much, and I'm proud of him, and I watched him grow up, and I enjoyed Antonio, and the two of them, you know, I wanted to help them. You know, plus, like I said, cameras, movies, movie stars, you know, everything that I love. And third, I, you know, wanted to heal myself. You know, I was 48, I guess, when we started. Ed's funeral, so it was probably 46. So we started about, I was like 47 and then 48, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
You know, there were so many reasons. I am working on my book, my memoir, and I figured what a good launching pad this would be, you know, to let it all hang out. And I have nothing to hide, that I wanted people to see what a person on the spectrum was really like, and a person with mental health disorders as well.
Yeah. I wonder, and I want to hear Antonio on this point. How did you, talk to you, Antonio, first on this question. How did you keep Dina from acting? You know what I mean? Like, did you have to remind her, Dina, this is a documentary. Was that ever an issue where you had to remind her, this is not really a performance, I just want you to be real? Or, I mean, how did that work?
Well, it's always easy when everything's fun and easy, right? It's always easy right. When you're just, you know, when we're just at the movie theater, we're just eating or laughing. But, you know, when hard things happen, then, yeah, you know, sometimes there is an interruption where we're saying, you know, sometimes we step in and we say, hey, like, let's stop filming. Let's not get into anything related to something too personal. Mm-hmm. You know, we don't want to go there. Or, yeah, sometimes it's like, oh, don't, you know, sometimes Dina would worry, oh, what's someone going to say about X thing? Like when she, she got upset that her straw had fallen on the cup. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's stuff that, we do step in and we say, hey, we have a conversation. There's a lot of conversations that are constantly happening, you know. That's with any filming, you're constantly, after you're done with the shot, you know, you're having a discussion about, you know, what does this mean?
Yeah.
You know, and that's how we keep going, right? It's like we're always talking about the movie that we're constructing and making sure that we're all on the same page. And even when we were editing, you know, we showed Dina the first draft of the film, you know, at her house on the laptop. And we wanted to hear what she had to say and what stuff she wanted in, what stuff she wanted out.
Yeah, Dina, what was your reaction, that first cut? The stuff that, beyond the stuff that you wanted in or you wanted out or whatever, like just your general reaction when you saw your life there in this film.
Well, you know, I thought that they did a pretty darn good job, so I really didn't have any criticism. So they were both very talented young men, and Sophia Supercaso is like brilliant as an editor, and they were all very gracious and wonderful to me, and it's like they knew me from the start. You know, Dan probably, you know, Dan and I had many conversations, and it was like when we saw each other and he came back from New York after Ed was dying, it was almost like, it's the same thing. It's I got to know these guys. And so it's almost like we developed this trust issue. So when he showed the cut, it was almost like we were kind of like a family. So it felt like very natural. But every now and then I got self-critical and I'm like, did I really do this? And Dan and Antonio and Sophia, I think we saw it on my couch in my apartment. I was wearing sweatpants, and then we went to Moxie Productions and we saw it again, and I'm like, hey, that's not too bad. So like it's kind of interesting how I was like, hey, wait a minute, I thought I did this, you know?
Yeah.
And it was it became a combination of, yes, this is my life, this is a documentary, I'm very big into watching documentaries and reality shows.
Yeah.
And this is very, it was very interesting. So I wasn't so upset. But at first I was like, you know, was I supposed to be doing this? It was very hard on myself. Like, yeah. I heard a lot of actors and reality stars are very, like, critical. And I became one of those people. So it's all about developing the relationship, knowing your surroundings.
Yeah. Let me play a moment from the film. This is at the golf course. You're with Monica and Frank, and you're expressing to mostly Frank your sense of frustration,
right,
about the fact that your relationship with your, I think it was fiance at the time, yeah,
right,
Scott, wasn't going where you wanted it.
Right.
And mind you, it's a great scene, I have to say. Scott's there, he can sort of hear you, but you're expressing this frustration. It's a great moment, I have to say.
Right,
and I
want
to let me play this. This is from the film, Dina.
Yeah, you got it.
You know, I was wondering what you guys, I want to ask you guys, like, some advice. You know, like, I'm an observer, and everybody, like, looked at you guys like you were, like, amazing because you were a couple. And
yeah.
I was kind of feeling bad, like, that I couldn't get Scott to hug me a whole lot. And I used to, like, so I was talking to a bunch of people, and they were telling me that, you know, I have to find a way to, like, get Scott to get out of his own world. And
maybe at first he was kind of shy. He just thought that maybe he did something.
Yeah, it's very hard because sometimes, you know, he tells me that he's sorry, but then, like, I bought him this book, like, The Joy of Sex, and he doesn't seem interested. We're living together, for crying out loud. I was married before, and I'm getting really upset because I don't think he likes me. He's emotionally, you know, acts like a child in that area. And
what was it like watching that scene with Scott, Dina?
Oh, my God. At first, I was a little embarrassed, thinking, wow, am I a really bad person? Am I a mean, selfish, bitchy person that really wasn't thinking of his needs? And I was told by Antonio and Dan, no, you're not. You have needs. I was even told by Monica, express your feelings, because, you know, I knew Monica for like 30 years, and just a year before she married Frank. So, you know, so I was able to tell Frank before this that I had, you know, because Monica and Frank are both cuddly type people with each other, and they're constantly holding hands. So right away, you know, I needed some help from people that I can trust. But at the same time, I don't know where I got it. Probably my mother, you know, who's very expressive. I've always been a cuddly, cuddly hugger by nature. And I found out that that was good. And that when I had discussed several times with Scott, Dan, Antonio, they said, no, you're doing the right thing by expressing what you want, because what would happen is that you would hold it in and get angry. So what you were was disappointed and frustrated. You weren't angry and you weren't mean. You know, when you're on a date with somebody, and, you know, Scott, by all means, is learning from this experience.
Yeah.
You know, this was almost 3 years ago. You know, Scott was on his phone. And, you know, I went to an assertiveness group and they said, you know, by all means, playing with your cell phone is a key to showing people that you don't really want to be involved. So, you know, I was frustrated and I felt like I was a mean person.
Did seeing that scene, did that make Scott think in a different way about looking at his phone all the time, or his lack of intimacy? I mean, did that scene, did the film help you and Scott, or did it make
oh yeah, it did, it sure did. And it showed his parents to talk to him, you know, they made him turn off his phone. This does not mean that Scott is not a good person by all means. He's a wonderful person. It's just that people on the spectrum sometimes do things. I mean, I took a look at myself on things when my mother used to get on me about not looking people in the eye. By all means, I wanted to. It was just a trait that people on the spectrum sometimes, you know, have. And I took a good look at myself maybe at a long time ago, in my 20s and then 30s. But I've even wrote people apologies, which I didn't have to, but, you know, back in my 20s, saying, I'm sorry that I didn't do this, but I had a wonderful mother that was on my back all the time telling me, you know, look people in the eye because you're a really nice person. It's just, it gives people, you know, and all these assertiveness classes. So I wanted to be the teacher for Scott, you know, besides an equal partner, but help the person I love.
That's Dina Buono. She's the star of the documentary film Dina. Antonio Santini directed the film alongside Dan Sickles. Tomorrow night, the Utah Film Center is screening the film for free at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. Antonio will be there, so will Dan Sickles, and so will Dina, for a Q&A after the screening. For the details, go to our website, radiowest.org. We'll take another break and come back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Back now to our conversation about the film Dina. We have with us the filmmaker Antonio Santini, who co-directed the film alongside Dan Sickles, and Dina herself, Dina Buono. Antonio, I wanted to ask you about the this kind of perfect sequence I thought of, kind of like a masterpiece sequence in an amazing film, with the bachelorette party and the bachelor party, two sort of playing against each other in the film. Would you just set this up for us? I wanted to play a moment where Scott's with the guys, but would you just talk a little bit about this? This gives you a sense of how kind of funny it can be and how real it is, this film.
Yeah, I mean, we knew, you know, we kind of could imagine what was going to happen. You know, we understood how both sides saw sex differently.
Yeah.
But honestly, yeah, it wasn't until we were filming that we realized how good the sequence would be. Especially the car, you know, because you really, what I love about Scott's character in the film is that he really represents masculinity in a way that's not typically portrayed on screen.
Mm-hmm.
There's something sweet and naive about the whole thing, and super relatable. I think the part in the movie that probably gets the biggest laugh is them talking in that car.
Yeah.
You know, because it basically when he discovered masturbation Because basically every single guy in the movie theater goes, it's like a meme almost. Everyone goes, yeah, that's me. So,
yeah.
Yeah, we were proud of that one.
Yeah. Let me play a moment with Scott talking with the guys. This is basically his bachelor party.
So how was it the first time you did it?
It's just that basically the first time I was nervous. I was really...
I bet you will.
Yeah.
You're not nervous. You're either doing it wrong or...
You just don't...
You're just unconscious. I don't know what's going on.
You just feel uncomfortable.
Scared if I had to.
Yeah.
I'll bet.
I would actually be scared out of my wits if I was... I had to have sex for the first time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about you with Dina?
We haven't gotten that far yet.
Okay.
I mean, I barely kiss her at this point. See, I'm afraid of doing something wrong, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Like in the wrong position, all of a sudden something comes out the wrong way.
Are you afraid you might...
Sorry, dear, I didn't mean to squirt you in the face.
All right. Or afraid you might do something wrong that she might get mad, though.
Yeah. All right. Like I'm too rough on her or whatever. Yeah. She thinks sometimes when I hug her, I'm too rough on her, she tells me. Yeah.
It's such a great scene. And the way it plays against against Dina's bachelorette party is amazing. Again, they're so just amazing, I have to say. And moments went, and the way you've composed the scenes, the way it plays out, I think a lot of people wonder if it's scripted. I mean, you must get that a lot.
Yeah, I mean, I always say it's just magic. You know, we'd wake up and the whole day is about the film and the scenes and how they play out. And, you know, once we got into the habit of, you know, we set up a system of how we shot it. You can tell in the movie it's very cohesive,
mm-hmm.
In the way that it looks. And once we got into that habit, then we really stuck to it. And, you know, honestly, it's like that's the thing that we're focused on, right? Like, you know, you have athletes that really focus on practicing, you know, I don't know, like their body or whatever. That was the thing at that moment for those years that we were really hyper-focused on. And, you know, I really am happy that it worked out because it's really what allows Dina to take center stage.
Yeah.
You know, it's the fact that it's so simple and that, you know, your eye is always drawn to her and Scott.
Dina, was there ever a moment when you kind of regretted it, when you were tired of the cameras in your face, when you just wanted to sit down and watch television without someone filming you?
Right now, I have to say, you know, I miss those cameras. I absolutely love cameras, but, you know, I absolutely, you know, adored them. Actually, a little funny anecdote. I remember they were leaving and we hugged goodbye and I was still mic'd and they left and I was like, uh-oh, but I didn't even know. And they were like 10 minutes away and had pulled out and they were like, no, we'll get them tomorrow. And I said, does this mean I'm going to have to go to bed with a microphone on? But, you know, there have been times where I've had a bad night. Maybe I didn't get any sleep. Maybe, you know, I don't like to say I'm a victim, but I have trauma. Mm-hmm. I have trauma issues, I guess.
Sure.
And there's been times I might have had a nightmare. Or maybe someone called me and said, you know, well, I don't like you anymore because you're such a snob because you have all these things. And maybe somebody had been really vicious because, you know, sometimes that's the case. And then I would have a bad day. And what it is getting tough, getting a thick skin, and getting some coping skills and putting it aside for them because you're working as a team. You know, I'm the protagonist, the subject. Most of the time Scott would be at work, so it would be me. I would get up maybe, sometimes he'll come around 9:30 if they were shooting when they had came down, and I would be, you know, dressed and ready to go, drinking a cup of coffee, and they would come, and sometimes it would take me to therapy, which, you know, and, you know, there were different things. And, you know, Antonio first, you know, Dan would be the hugger first, and then Antonio would be the one with the longer hugger. Everything's going to be okay. And we're going to be, you know, he really and truly became like a best friend. He took care of me, and we checked up on each other. We texted each other. It was mostly Antonio and Dan who did this because Adam traveled all over the place, but Adam too had, you know, but Antonio became like the one that Dan would go to visit his girlfriend, you know, Antonio would be around. So he would be like checking up on me to make sure that I survived the week. And so it was the same thing, but there were times when, you know, I would miss the cameras really bad. And other times I was like, okay, I have a week off and I'm going to do better the next week. But that's, you know, if you kind of get the idea. But most of the time, oh my God, I want the cameras back. I want somebody, most of the time I was like, I want somebody to discover me now.
That's Dina Buono, who is the star of the documentary film, Dina.
I'm hoping Dina 2 comes out. I'm hoping for a reality show. I'm already at work at this.
Well, you'd be good at it. Dina Buono, star of the documentary film, Dina, joined us from her home outside of Philadelphia. Dina, what a pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for doing this.
It's absolutely been a pleasure to meet you, too. And I hope to see you out there in Utah. It's been quite the pleasure.
Great. And Antonio,
thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Antonio Santini directed the film alongside Dan Sickles. Antonio, thank you very much to you as well.
Otherwise known as Dr. Love.
Tomorrow night, the Utah Film Center is screening Dina. It's for free at the Rose Wagner Performing Arts Center in downtown Salt Lake City. This is a unique opportunity to see this really extraordinary film with an audience on a big screen. Antonio is going to be there. Dan Sickles will be there. Dina, of course, she will be there for a Q&A after the screening. You will not want to miss it. For details, go to our website, radiowest.org. Radio West is a production, again, of KUER News, the program produced by Benjamin Bombard and Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.